Agenda item 13. Report to possible discussion on Allen's Creek Reservoir update by David Collingworth, Central and Lower Basin Regional Manager.
Before David talks here, we're off. What do y'all do with all that money? I'm fixing to show you what we do with all that money. We're at that point that we talked about in our strategic planning where the hockey stick's going and we're here at a flat rate, and now then we're going to do a little vertical up. So we're going to talk about that and how we're going to manage that. And we are in partnership with the city of Houston. We have kind of had to be aggressive to get to where we are today, but we think this is a good news story. David.
Can you hear me? Is my mic
yes.
too loud? We have been talking with you for years about Allen's Creek. We gave you the warning about a year ago that we were needing to move out. The one thing that we learned in 2011 is that there was a greater need for water in the lower part of the basin with customers like the City of Sugar Land, customers like Gulf Coast Water Authority. And that we had a piece of low-hanging fruit that was in front of us that also had a long lead time as far as some of the challenges for developing the project. So last year we went out for a proposal and we started interviewing firms, BRA in the City of Houston. We selected Montgomery Watson Harza. They're behind you. I'll introduce them to you in just a moment. They were also at our last meeting. And really the purpose of this presentation today is twofold. It's to, again, show you how ready we are to move out and where we are in the process. And it's also because this watch is so complex, I want to break it into little pieces so that when you're talking and thinking about Allen's Creek, you can understand it's more than a bulldozer pushing some dirt, the complexity of the reservoir project. So what we're going to do... This is kind of my outline. I'm going to give you a project review. I'm going to break the project into its different components, ask questions whenever one crosses your mind. We're going to talk a little bit about Allen's Creek, the challenges with the permitting and all of the things that we don't know. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the proposed budget and the timeline and really trying to work ourselves into a position to where we can come to you in April with a financial game plan, how we're going to pay for the project, and what the spending is going to look like in the years to come. So here it is, Allen's Creek. I think most of you know it's a project that the property was acquired, the water right permit was acquired from TCEQ. And it's about 10,000 acres. It's 70% City of Houston, 30% Brazos River Authority. Here's a little bit more a reference for you. The regional water plan has an overwhelming majority of all this water being used in the Brazos Basin. When the City of Houston became partners to the project, it wasn't necessarily that way. But since then, they've developed other projects like Loose Bayou that's allowed them the flexibility to not rely on this water, and hence the reason the legislation a few years ago that moved the start date of this project, I guess it was from 2018 to 2025. That doesn't mean the project can't start earlier, it just means the project has to be started by then. However, what we learned in 2011 is we really can't afford to wait that long. We've got customers that could use the water today, we could sell all the water today. The project's in the... I want to show you this. You've seen this as part of the discussions of the system operations permit and other things that we do in the basin, but this helps tell the story of the benefits of Allen's Creek. Allen's Creek is going to be an off-channel reservoir, as depicted right here. So what that means is that in this huge basin of all these reservoirs, as we're releasing floodwaters out of any one reservoir, there were times in 2011, late in the drought toward 2012, that we were releasing water out of Lake Limestone, and we didn't have lakes that were anywhere close to conservation pool. So we could have used that water, taken it here, and stored it in Allen's Creek Reservoir. It provides a tremendous storage as an advantage to how Brad and his folks operate the rest of our reservoirs. So with a full Allen's Creek Reservoir, we will be able to maintain water in other reservoirs for strategic use solely based on all of the other factors that are going on in the basin, like rainfall and drought and stuff like that. So it's a tremendous benefit, not only that it provides another 100,000 acre feet of water into the system, but it provides a really flexible management tool in how we operate these reservoirs. And let me go back. One of the other things that I talked to you a lot about during 2011 is that we were this close. We were really this close, and we avoided a financial disaster in the fact that at Lake Granger, we were fixing to spend millions of dollars chasing water. Central Texas and a couple other water supply organizations were in the same boat we were. They were fixing to start chasing water because of water levels, because of the drought. And this reservoir would have played a this reservoir would have allowed us a lot of security. And what I mean by chasing is that as the reservoirs decrease, their pump stations were getting further and further and further away from the reservoir, and we were fixing to start dredging projects to try to get water or lay pipes and put in emergency pumps to get to that water. So just another benefit of having this reservoir at the bottom of our basin. Through the selection process, the City of Houston and the BRA interviewed a bunch of firms. We had some really good teams that proposed. I've already shown a lot of you this. We selected Montgomery Watson Harza. We've got four individuals from the company here today. Marshall Dabbert is the president. Marshall. And with him is Chris Young, David Irvine, and Bill Swanson. Bill's going to be our project manager. You can see some of the credentials on the board. As far as this was the one firm that we felt like had applicable experience building reservoirs, building off-channel reservoirs in the United States. Our project managers completed five projects such as this in the last 10 years. Our lead designer, nine off-channel reservoirs. Our lead pump designer has 40 years experience in pump designs. They've subcontracted with a company out of their Houston office that's completed over 50 permits, such as the permit we're going to be chasing, the 404 permit. And this is some of the other folks that they've contracted with. We selected these guys in November, and I think it's safe to say that in the few months since we've been talking, they've spent probably hundreds of thousands of dollars developing this scope of work. This is just the scope of work for the project, the things that we have to accomplish. As far as our staff time goes, we're probably up around tens of thousands of dollars. And the reason that I tell you that is because I want you to know that we're crossing every T and dotting every I to make sure that every step of the way, while we're trying to push, we're also trying to make sure that we have all our bases covered. And that'll become obvious and more important in a minute. So there's the team. I'm going to break the project down into four elements now. We're going to talk first here about the embankment. When we talk about Allen's Creek, one of the most significant structures is probably about 5 miles of this soil sediment embankment here on the downside stream of the reservoir. The reason I show you this is because it starts about here, and then you can see the double black line, and it probably goes to this area here. I say probably until we understand some more of the soil and clay features. We don't know exactly where the reservoir is going to be. The initial design of the reservoir had this yellow line here bend back around, but it was going to inundate another wetland, and that was just going to escalate the mitigation cost and make the project exponentially more difficult, if you will. So this is the the line for the levee system. As we become more concrete in knowing where this levee system is going to be, it may or may not force us to purchase a little bit more property based on some of the reservoir components. So we won't know that for a couple of years down the road. Okay, now let's get to some of the big challenges also. This is a diagram. It may be hard to kind of tell what it is, but this is the Brazos River, this blue line. And what I talked about is this being an off-channel reservoir. So we're going to have to pump water during opportune times in the Brazos, and we're going to have to pull it into our reservoir. one of the biggest challenges with that is being able to move the quantity of water that we need when it's available, but also not fill a reservoir with sediment. When the Brazos is flowing, you guys have all seen it. It's this brown chocolate milk Yahoo soda looking reservoir, looking river. So we're going to have to design, as part two of this, we talked about the levee system, we're going to have to design sedimentation basins that will let this water flow in. Some of the sediment starts to flow out before it gets into our wet well and ultimately into our pump station. This is something what our pump station would look like. And this would be pumping water out of the river into the reservoir. It's got to take into account all of the aquatic life issues in the Brazos. We've got to make sure that we're not pumping in fish. We've got to make sure that when the Brazos is flowing, we're not pumping in sediment. We don't have trees and limbs and other debris that are filling in our pump station. So major part number two of the umbrella of Allen's Creek. Okay, here's Allen's Creek. In the early discussions of Allen's Creek, the pump station was going to be right here. Okay, that very well may be problematic because of this Oxbow Reservoir right here. And if you look at parts of this map, you can start to see these pieces of white, and that's where the river is actually changing course. Also, you can see these blue half moon shapes all up and down the river, and those are actually Oxbow Lakes where the river has actually changed course. So what we're going to have to show the Corps of Engineers in all of our analysis is a very safe, most practical opportunity to pump water and return water out of the Brazos, and it's most likely going to be in this stretch right here. A more stable area of the river that's going to allow us to build a piece of infrastructure that's very expensive, but we'll get the full lifetime out of the reservoir. However, because of the requirements of the permitting process, we're going to have to vet two or three different options and prove why the option that we're going with probably right here is the number one option. So that's the pump station.
Can we say return?
Yep.
And that's to allow you to return some of the sediment?
Well, no. It's actually to allow us to return the water back into the river for our customers downstream.
Oh, just to, okay.
Yeah, the plan is to fill the reservoir. When the customers call on the water, we'll release the water out of the reservoir just like we do our others. Right now, there are no plans for having direct pump stations in the reservoir to the customers. The customers, whether it was the City of Houston or any BRA customers, they're just too far downstream for the quantity of water that we would need to release.
So your sediment basin is to protect the reservoir itself?
The sediment basin is for two purposes. It's to protect the reservoir, keep the reservoir from filling in, and it's also to keep that sediment out of those expensive pumps.
So you're going to have an opportunity to remove some of the sediment from time to time?
Absolutely. There's likely not a scenario where we would be pumping water the majority of the year. Mm-hmm. So whenever we're not pumping water, we'll have running loaders, it'll be in there cleaning that sediment out. It'll be a real easy task.
Okay.
Yep.
Sounds good to me.
Yep.
Yeah.
So this is just a diagram, a picture of what an outlet structure would look like. The lake would be here. This is typical kind of a Corps of Engineers, and the water would be released here. That's what that picture is there of a reservoir. And it could be either sent down through a pipeline into the river or a spillway, kind of like we have at Lake Limestone or Lake Granberry. This would be concrete structures to dissipate the energy of the water as it flows into the river, because the velocities of the river and what the water being returned to the river does to the river is going to be a major part of the 404 permitting. So you can see that there's three main major engineering components. Any one of them in its own would be quite of an undertaking. So let's talk about the permitting a little bit. The big permit that everybody hears about is the 404 permit, and there's actually multiple permits that we have to get. We have to get a 404 permit. We have to get an approval permit through the TCEQ to let us build the reservoir in Texas, which they usually yield to the Corps of Engineers once they have granted the 404. We're going to have permits because we have two cemeteries on our property. We'll have to deal with that. And then we also know that we do have significant amounts of archaeological stuff that's going to have to be spoken for and moved and And then there's another major permit that we're going to have, and that's through FEMA for floodplain management, because we are changing the flooding characteristics of the Brazos River, and also we're building a reservoir, we're building structures in floodplain. So all of that's going to be major permit components to the reservoir. The 404, which is everybody talks about being the largest, most exhaustive permit, and that is because it is. It's going to take us years and millions of dollars to collect all of the information to submit the permit application to the Corps of Engineers. And what this represents here is this this circle of non-ending permitting activities that you want to avoid. So as a team, the BRA and Montgomery Watson Harza, the decision that we made was to take this project all the way to 30% design. And that way, when we submit all of our information to the federal government, the Corps of Engineers, we can know without a doubt exactly where our levee is going to be, what our flow characteristics and impacts coming out of the river, what our discharge characteristics back into the river. We'll have a better understanding of how our structures and what we're building is going to impact any endangered species, any threatened species, how it's going to impact floods, just this whole gamut of information that the Corps of Engineers has to have so that they can rule that this reservoir is something that they can, A, they can recommend, and B, they can do so by staying out of court. Because that's really where this gets bogged down, and where a 10-year project becomes a 20-year project when we start having to defend all of these decisions in a court of law. So we've broken the project down into three phases. Phase one is environmental assessment up to 30% design, 2016 through about 2019. Phase two is the permit approval process, the public interaction, relocation of the archaeological stuff, construction. But I want to make sure you understand something. I put the public interaction in phase two because that in the core process is where, by rule, we have to set and develop the stakeholder groups and bring in Parks and Wildlife and bring in anybody that shows interest in the project and work through all of these issues. The actual public interaction has already started. We've already started visiting with elected officials. We're getting ready to go out with a letter to the adjacent landowners and to the Austin County folks. So that they'll understand what's fixing to happen, and we can stay ahead of the project and communicate to the locals. One of y'all have a question? Thought I saw a hand. Okay. And then construction is the third phase. All three phases, what we're looking at is about $80 million to do all of the permitting, all of the design, and take us through construction management with Montgomery Watson Harza. So you're looking at about $80 million for phase one, phase two, some of phase three. The majority of phase two, the majority of phase three, which is the construction, is somewhere in the $200 million range. And I'm warning you now, these estimates are, as we like to say, 30,000 foot. Every step of the way, as we get closer to understanding our compaction issues, our all of the issues with the pump station, that number may go up, may go down. The one number that we really don't have our hands around, and it's been used for mitigation, which is very complex. Basically, the federal government says when you destroy habitat, you've got to replace it. In many instances, you have to replace more than you destroy. And we just don't have right now, until we understand the full impact of where that levee is going to be and the impacts of the pump station and the river, we just don't have a grasp of this very difficult number, which is $25 million. So what's next is we're going to continue. When I came to you in November, our plan was to work through all the scope of work and all the issues that we had and come to you today for approval. Because of some of the issues in developing the scope and developing the cash flows, we've decided to come back to you in April. The one thing that we had to start working on was an evaluation of the Houston Toad. So we signed a contract with MWH for $25,000-$30,000. It should stay under $50,000. But the issue is the toad's endangered, and there's only a few weeks of the year that the environmentalists can be out to do their toad surveys, and that is between late January and into March. If you miss that, you're pushed off a year to the next time frame. However, in the next time frame, if the environmental conditions aren't right, you're pushed off another year. So by not starting this year, we could have easily found ourselves 2 or 3 years down the road before we would have had that information to put into our 404 permit. So that's why we started with that. Also, we still have a few bolts to tweak with the contract negotiations and the scope of work. We're going to formalize an interlocal agreement with the City of Houston so that they understand exactly what we're doing. And then we'll be back to you in April with a pretty defined process of how we plan on funding $80 million over the next few years. Because really what happens and is that with all of the engineering to 30% and all the environmental, the budget number for next year will probably be somewhere in the $15 to $18 million. And then the following year, another $17 to $18 million. So while the project budget numbers aren't changing now, when we can spend that money is kind of shifted to the left as far as the timeline. We've got to figure out the most appropriate way to fund that. Questions?
City of Houston reimburses us end of the project, midterm.
That's what we've got. That's what we've got as our. The original contract as it's written is not really clear to that, and it's an old agreement. And I think the City of Houston, at least in their verbal communications to me, has agreed to start paying back sooner than later. They just don't have the money in their budget right now to start that process, and that's kind of what we need to define.
Does a new mayor in Houston affect this process?
All good, bad, or indifferent?
Yes, good. Good work at it. Let me just say another thing that can happen. And that is if Houston, for some reason, decides that they want to stay and be a partner, the real elephant in the room is 30,000 and 70,000 acre feet, and what price do you charge? Because our rate structure is different than the City of Houston's. If we say, for example, right now it states what it is, it won't say what it is because of this, but let's just say it goes up to $150 an acre foot, and they want to charge $300 an acre foot, that's going to be a little politics. No, excuse me, a bunch of politics. So what we would like to do is to come, we'd like to buy them out. We've already offered to do that once, and they weren't amenable. But they may be now, because you look at their union problem, you look at their infrastructure problem, they got more problems than they can say grace over. So we may be in a better position than we've been in years.
David, how much land do we own compared to what we're going to flood?
We own approximately 10,000 acres. As the footprint, the 30,000 view says today, probably around 9,500 acres. We own some land here, which is the old alligator hole wetland. Thanks, Al, for that. Anyway, what we don't own are the properties for potential pump stations and the easements associated with those, because we just haven't determined where that's going to be. But that'll be a really minor land acquisition as compared to 10,000 acres of the reservoir site.
Well, this is going to be a beautiful reservoir, so people are going to want to buy land. Lease land? Are we going to get back into that business again? That worries me.
Only if you'll be the man.
Oh, no, sir. I'm retired.
Director Johnson, all that has to be evaluated. My recommendation would be that we don't get into that business, obviously. Because of where we are in the planning stage, and there's interest in this being a recreational reservoir. Also, there's some opportunities for us to build a reservoir, for us to build boat ramps and do things that allow public to have access. But I'm with you. I hope we don't get into the land management, boat docks, leases, and all that stuff. And also, part of the process early on is going to be establishing the expectation that this reservoir is going to fluctuate greatly. There'll be years like 2011 where we'll use just a tremendous amount of water out of that reservoir. It is going to be a water supply reservoir.
But the developers and the...
it's just going to be hard to keep them out.
There
it's
are
beautiful reservoir.
I could have lost a zero here. But now, $300 million divided by 100,000 is like 3,000, right?
that's just, we amortize, we calculate the cost per acre foot, so we put into our system rate, we amortize those expenses over a 35 to 40 year period.
Well, I understand that, plus, but if you were just going to go with, you know, if he and I were in a business out here, and we had an asset that we were going to produce, and it was going to cost us $3,000, and we were going to, currently we're selling that asset at 80 bucks for round numbers, it would take us a long time to amortize our cost at zero interest rate.
Yes, sir.
So, I mean, obviously the answer is the $80 is way lower than it's going to be at some point in the future.
Well, and also we're able to that's spread across all of our units of our system, and that becomes an issue that Houston doesn't have.
Well, I understand, but I mean, we're looking at doing something on the margin, and that's how most things. So I understand that all this water that we have over here will support this project, but at the margin, you're going to pay, and that's at this stage, and as we discussed earlier, everything takes longer than you think and costs more than you think.
Yeah.